Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Poetry Salon Cast. I am Tricia Faye Hefner.
And I'm Douglas Manuel.
On each episode, we interview one of our favorite poets to ask about their latest book.
What was difficult and what was easy about writing it.
And my favorite question, what do they do with a rough draft that wants to play rough?
If you want to hear more about the writers we interview and work with them in person, you can attend a live reading and workshop with them at the Poetry Salon.
Find out more and register for great workshops and events with us and our favorite poets at www.thepoetrysalon.com.
Now, without further ado, welcome to this week's episode of the Poetry Salon Cast.
Dianelli, please take us away.
Okay. Re-education. I listen to podcasts to learn about feminism, watch porn to make sure I'm doing it right. I dance on the bar because Coyote Ugly, because these shoes, this drink. I'm almost 30, and I still think Bloody Mary is a game with a mirror. Sometimes she appears at 2 a.m. Sometimes she's in the toilet, piss reflection before the flush. There is a truth in this magic. The time I took Plan B, then the other time I took Plan B, I bled for 2 months. There could have been a mother in me. I told no one, except the man at Tacos Lupita, who asked what I wanted in my burrito, and I think I said baby. I think I spun around 3 times and whispered a name, and there was no 4. When I fell, when a queen flew from my womb, there was glass and napkins and the doctor saying, wake up, wake up. Golden Shovel with Solstice after Gwendolyn Brooks and Terence Hayes. When we found her sex physician's book, we didn't think it was real. My mother wasn't cool enough for sex. We flipped through the pages, turning left, studying where each body fits in this school, the detailed figures of the man and woman, the parts we hid under cotton, kept from the lurking skin, a hand, a finger, the late night moon with its borrowed light. We lay our bodies on the bed. To strike the pose, mimic the face down, the ass out straight. We laughed and snorted. We looked like pigs singing oinks, our faces in the trough. This sin. I don't want to say what we did next. That we touched our own bodies, thin arms reaching to what bits of hair we'd grown. The beginning of a secret thing. Or that we reached for each other, a fumbled jazz of grips on the solstice in June. If today I could replay our hand's song, we would deny its music. When we each died a little on that bed, notes ending too soon.
Let's go, let's go. Love it.
All right. That is the poetry of Dianelli Antigua reading from her book, Ugly Music, from Yes, Yes. You can read Dianelli's entire biography on various websites, but I would just like to say a little bit about how I found your work, Dianelli. My good friend, Kelly Grace Thomas, mentor of mine, and when I reached out to her to ask for recommendations, she mentioned yours. I actually looked at the cover and realized I had already seen the cover and was so intrigued by it that I had bookmarked it or written a note to go check out your book earlier. And I downloaded it. And for those of you who don't know, Yes, Yes Books allows you to download books for $5 and get them instantaneously. And I just read it. And at every other poem, I was getting out of my seat, just going, oh, this is so good. I need to go for a run. I need to go take a hot shower. I need to take a cold shower. I need to become a better writer. So I was just really delighted with all of it. I think I read it in maybe two, maybe three sittings. Had a couple of stiff drinks afterwards. I am really delighted to get to talk to you on the podcast. And I was delighted to know that Doug already was familiar with your work. So that's kind of perfect.
Similar experience. Dianelli, when I first encountered your work, I was screening for the Tufts because I also had seen the cover everywhere on Best Of list. So I was like, oh, why is this so familiar already? And just from the first poem, my family being the historic Black Catholic family in my hometown, and to speak from that subjective position, I just fell in love with the voice, that the voice was so empowered, but so vulnerable, and also so in command of her body, of her meaning-making systems, of her world. I've never encountered a text that wears a crown so easily as it wears a bruise. Seriously, it's a pleasure to speak with you, my dear friend.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm overwhelmed with like feeling good, good feeling. I've never heard of my work talked about that way. And I just appreciate both of y'all's kind, kind words.
No pressure, no pressure. The first book, you know, you got to be careful not to get overly enamored of your own work. So no pressure that the next one will be just as good. My degree is in the psychology of creativity, so I'm always very afraid when I give people too many compliments because it does put that much pressure on you. And for those listeners who have not checked out the cover, haven't read the book, it's a picture of a horse's head covered in jewelry, I think is probably the best way to describe it. Or I think it's a unicorn head covered in jewelry and then juxtaposed against the title, which is Ugly Music. I would love to know how the book came together. I mean, if you can kind of summarize it, when did you know you had a full book and how did you go about collecting it?
So the book cover, it's actually a deer, a taxidermy deer, though it looks like a unicorn slash horse. I mean, you could mistake it for a million things because it's just bedazzled and it's gorgeous, but also very haunting and violent in a lot of ways. And I feel like that's kind of what my book embodies. I didn't really know I had a book at all. I was just in my MFA at NYU getting my thesis together. Catherine Barnett was my thesis advisor. And I was just, you know, putting together my manuscript in the hopes that later on down the road, I might submit it somewhere. A friend of mine heard of the Pamet River Prize through Yes Yes Books, and there's an option to also nominate someone's work. So my friend decided to nominate my work on my behalf. You know, he asked my permission and I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to win anything and whatever. And then I get word a few months later that it's a semifinalist. And then as a semifinalist, you present a full manuscript to the editors. So I'm like scrambling to put this manuscript together in its final form over the summer, like right before an extended thesis semester that I had planned for Florence, Italy. So, you know, I was planning on doing it there, like while eating lots of pasta, enjoying, you know, the Tuscan sun, you know. So I'm like completely scrambling in my Brooklyn apartment, and my partner's cat kept trying to play with all of the papers that I had laid out on the floor. And I put the book together that way. And then I ended up sending it off to Yes Yes Books. And I think it was September 1st, 2017, I found out that I had won the Pamet River Prize. And that meant that my little manuscript, Ugly Music, was going to become a book. I had no plans of sending out my manuscript. Again, it was a friend who believed in my work enough to nominate me. So I am ever grateful. And I thank him in the back of my book. And I thank him endlessly every day of my life for that wonderful opportunity to have my book out in the world. And one of the most beautiful surprises that anyone could ever ask for.
I think one of the really cool things, there's so much cohesion here. Just one of the things that I'm really interested in, is this idea of the diary series. Those poems do so much work. When did those poems become the backbone of the manuscript in your mind? Or were they later? Were they first? Did you feel like you were building them around there? Because it's one of the ways that you really find that kind of Aristotelian idea of unity of place and idea through that. Like there's a real unity that comes from that. So I was wondering if you could just talk about that series at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I took a class at NYU with Matt Rohrer that was about making it new. And one of our classes was about collage poems. Specifically, it was about the Sentos form. And the assignment was write a Sentos using the books that you have on your shelf. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about using other people's words. Granted, that's the form and that's the assignment. But I felt a little strange about it. So I was like, you know, I'm going to use my own words. I'm going to use my journals that are on my shelves. And that's how I'm going to write this collage poem. So that's how the diary entry poems were born, was out of this assignment that Matt Rohrer gave me. And after the first one, I just kept going with it. You know, I would grab a journal off the shelf. I would open it up and collect lines from it and then write a collage poem based off those lines. I gave myself some rules, like I could change pronouns. God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit were interchangeable. Tenses were, they could be changed. And then any filler language like conjunctions or articles, any of the connective tissues, I could use any of that I wanted. But the diary series just kind of came from that assignment and I just kept going with it. And even at some point wrote what I call sister poems. So if you'll see in my book, there are some diary entry poems where the number is repeated. So there's one diary entry number one, revisitation. Then there's diary entry number one, testimony. Those are sister poems in which I use the exact same language that I collected from my first diary, and I write an entirely new poem using that language. So in a way, it's like a retelling of a retold story, basically, because the first time I write the poem, it's a retelling of the story, and then I take that and then retell the story one more time. So it's almost like a regurgitation and then, you know, taking back in, like chewing the cud, as it were, of these poems. And even to this day, like I'm still working through the diaries, still going through, you know, the ones that I have on my shelf and writing them. And I think that it's going to be a continuous project. And again, like you can write endless sister poems. You could just keep going. So I believe it's a very generative form for myself that I've kind of created. And I'm excited to see like where else I can take it, if it'll be in the next book.
Yeah, I love the way you describe this. And it feels very much like, although you may not have been consciously intending a book, this process sounds like it's the perfect kind of process for generating a work that is in one way or another unified. And that's one of the many things that I really like about your book is that it has a breadth to it. I believe the book is in 5 parts and it seems to encompass chapters of the speaker's life from an early age up until early adulthood. And it feels very much like words, themes, ideas, motifs get repeated over and over. So it feels like it was intended to be something very cohesive.
Yeah, I have a very obsessive personality in general, not even thinking about, oh, you know, I want these poems to live side by side and be cohesive in a collection. That's just kind of how my mind works. Like I constantly am thinking about the same images, or the same images kind of come across to me throughout my daily life. I actually did a word cloud of my manuscript to see what words I was repeating. All right. I can't put 2 poems that have the word eggs next to each other. I can't do it. So I was like, okay, I need to see which words I'm repeating. And like, I can never use these words ever again. That's not happened. I use the word eggs repeatedly over and over again all the time because I'm obsessed with them as far as like what they mean, womanhood, fertility, the female body. And it, all of those themes come into my poetry. So it's just almost impossible for me not to continue to use that image or that word. Same thing with the moon. Those images keep coming back. So I wasn't, again, even thinking about like, okay, I'm creating a cohesive collection. I was just thinking more about like what is actually occupying my mind all the time. Those poems are just born out of obsession and not being able to let things go, as it were. the poems do deal with some very heavy, heavy topics, a lot of them about trauma and physical abuse and mental illness. And I really wanted to be able to use the poems, especially with those repeated images, to kind of show the fragility, the delicate psyche of the speaker in these poems, where she is in her mind and in the process of her journey through young adulthood into adulthood, and how those images keep repeating themselves every single stage of her life. And I also, like, I don't have any qualms about saying, like, for the most part, I am very close to the speaker of these poems. I'm not going to say I am the speaker of every poem, especially the diary entry poems do play with time and truth in a way that I can't stand by and say, like, that's biographical fact, but they do hold an emotional truth that I can definitely stand by. I know for a fact that I'm very close neighbors, cousins with the speaker of these poems. She feels like a part of me. And I wrote this book in a way to honor her and honor her experiences. Because there's so much shame around trauma and abuse. I think one of the ways in which we can get to a place of healing is to speak those things out loud. They don't need to be in a book, but maybe to someone else that you trust. And I wrote this book and I'm trusting the world. So judge tenderly, please.
Yes.
So I love hearing about the word cloud. Were there any surprises for you, like real surprises when you got to see your obsessions in those words? Or every time were you like, of course it was eggs. Of course it was, like how you said.
You know, absolutely no surprises. I think I know myself pretty well at this point. I have been writing since I was 9 in journals. I'm used to my voice and I'm used to like how I write and what I write about. And then I've also been in therapy for the past 10 years. So like you really get to learn about yourself in a way. I'm sure my therapist has, if I did the word cloud and I showed it to her, she'd be like, of course, of course, of course. Do you know you would write poems with those? So I wasn't surprised at any of the words that were repeated. Eggs was one of them, moon, God, mother, father. And all of those things do play a really important part in each of the poems that they're in and just throughout the manuscript, especially the mother and especially the father. I think those two come back again and again. And then God is just kind of like the umbrella under which everything exists. So
one of the things that I noticed the first time I read the book of poems, there's a lot of frank discussion about sex. There's a lot of frank discussion or depiction, I think, about our modern world. People can tell just listening to the two poems you already read, this is taking place in modern day America, in a built-up world. This is not out in the forest picking flowers. And you use some words that I think a lot of poets would be afraid or intimidated to use in poetry. Like, I really like that you refer to the vagina as pussy. It's colloquially how we tend to refer to it. I'm wondering if there was any discussion with anyone, if anyone told you, don't use that word, call it something else, call it a flower.
Like, or sex, like all those old Sharon Olds poems, you know, where she always calls it the sex.
You're right. Sharon Olds. Because I think, you know, calling it the sex works for the time period and whatever. That's pretty bold. But to just call it the pussy, because that's colloquially how we refer to it, to me, that was very refreshing and eye-catching and really made me feel like I was talking to a real person.
So, I mean, I grew up very religious. Words like that were not allowed in my home or for me to even think about. I was very legalistic in my faith. I didn't even want to think about anything unholy. So I would go to sleep with music on, church music on, so that if I died in the middle of the night and I had an impure thought, that I would still go to heaven because I wouldn't have thought about it because I'd be listening to this church music. So to go from that to now I'm writing about pussy in my book, I have gone through an extreme transformation in my life. And I think because I grew up in such a strict environment where things were off limits, now I'm doing the radically opposite of that. I'm like, nothing is off limits. I can say whatever the hell I want. If I want to call it a pussy, I can call it a pussy. If I want to say the word dick, I can say dick. So in this book, I have given myself the permission that I was never granted before in my past. Again, I'm trying to honor who lived that past, by giving her this gift and saying, here is where you can play and do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. Go ahead.
I love this idea of taking care of one's past self through the act of future writing and future sharing. That kind of self-care, I think, is something that we really don't think about that writing can do. I think we often think about the cathartic nature of writing, but again, thinking about that you're taking care of your past self. We'll get back to that interview in a moment. If you enjoy this podcast and want to learn more about us, log on to thepoetrysalon.com.
Most writers need a community around them to sustain their motivation and excitement for writing. The mission of the Poetry Salon is to provide inspiration, education, and support for poets everywhere at a price that is affordable.
Together, we are building a thriving community through online classes, e-courses, and readings, so you have the tools to live the life of a growing, prolific, accountable writer.
You also get opportunities to share your work and receive supportive feedback, then turn your finished pieces into journal submissions, building an audience for your writing.
Again, visit thepoetrysalon.com to find out more and register today. I think for now with the questions, which poem in the collection was the easiest to write? For me, you know, I journal every day. I've also been, you know, a diarist like you. Like, I'm always scribbling.
So out of the ones that I shared, Reeducation was actually the easiest one, I think, in the whole collection to write, because I feel like I did just reach and grab it from the sky. I often write notes in my phone. There was this one note that I had written. I had been talking to my roommate. He's like a brother to me. He's also a poet. But he told me, you know, you should be a stand-up comedian. Because I would come home after all these Tinder dates and after all of these different things happening to me in New York City. He'd be like, you need to put this together. You need to do, you know, tight 10. Like, this is going to be awesome. So one of the things that I wrote was I listened to podcasts to learn about feminism. And then a few other things. I just grabbed that from, you know, my notes on my phone. And I started writing the poem. And I did want this poem to have a bit of humor to it. I mentioned, you know, watching porn to make sure that you're doing it right, which actually the opposite is true. If you want to know how to do it right, do not watch porn.
Or somebody needs to tell every young man in the world that.
I mean, again, I don't want to say that all porn is like that, because there is some porn that, I guess, feminist porn, as they call it, that can be quite instructional or helpful. But at least at the beginning, I was like, I want this to be kind of funny. I want this to be about my experience that, like, yes, as someone that was raised really religious, in order for me to learn about feminism, I do need to listen to podcasts, because no one taught me that I had agency. I was being raised to be a preacher's wife, and someone placed that identity upon me and said, this is what you are going to do for the rest of your life. You will be a man's partner and help him build a church. So for me to try to re-educate myself, I would listen to podcasts. And one of them was called Stuff Mom Never Told You. And that's a feminist podcast that I don't think exists anymore, but it was really helpful at the time. Yeah, I started with that line and it just kind of all fell through me. And then suddenly it started getting serious and it started going in a different direction, bringing in some of my own personal experiences about me and my body and things that I had gone through and how I had to take care of myself in a different way. I was taking care of my body this time. You know, intellectually, I had been doing something to take care of myself, and now I was needing to do something else. So this poem just, I feel like I didn't have to do much of anything. I don't remember editing this poem at all. And when I say at all, like at all, maybe I moved a comma. That's about it. It happened, and that's what you got. That's what you get. That's re-education. It was definitely was the easiest one, because I didn't have to touch it after, you know, it was on the page.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the benefit of getting a line that really works. And if you get that line, it can trigger so many other things and then it flows out. And sometimes it is just those moments of conversation you have with another person and you're just getting honest. You're just being honest about something and it all comes just shooting out after that. 90% of writing is just getting out of your way, getting out of the part of you that says, let me be interesting and put on a show, and just getting to that honesty that's the hard part. Once you can do that, though, the poems will come more easily, theoretically, because that part of you that's trying not to tell the truth. Like my friend Nikhil Davis has said, poetry is like a psychological game of cat and mouse that you're playing with yourself. You sometimes are trying to say something and you're also trying to evade saying it at the same time. That's when the poems can become very challenging. That's my long-winded segue. Tell us about the other one that was more challenging to write, and how did it generate, and what kind of challenge did it give you?
So the more challenging one was the Golden Shovel with Solstice, based on the fact that it's a golden shovel, and that is really, really hard. I mean,
I've never made one work. Much respect due. Golden shovels are way harder than they appear.
I don't know what possessed me to try to write one. No clue. I have no idea. I think I was just like, hey, let me try to write a golden shovel. I think I was just kind of going into it like naively. And I was like, you know, Terrence Hayes can do it. Like, let me try it. Let me see like if I can like touch the hem of his garment in a way. Like, let me just see if I can get there. And to my surprise, I was able to just get a few lines out. And then the first ones, I was like, am I really writing about my mom's sex book? Is that what I'm really writing about right now? I'm like, I guess so. So I just kept going. I think what proved to be really challenging, though, was keeping with the golden shovel form, which at the end of every line is a word from Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, We Real Cool, or it can be any of her poems, really, but I used that one for this one specifically. And I noticed one thing that Hayes did is he allowed himself to hyphenate words and have them spill over into the next line. At first, I didn't want to do that just because as a Virgo, to me, I didn't like the way it looked on the page. I like things to be neat and orderly. And I was like, nah, I don't like the way that looks. But then I gave myself that permission to try it and see what might happen once I, you know, let myself do that. And I, again, just was really surprised at where I was able to take the poem. It ended up working out. And again, like completely, completely surprised that I wrote a golden shovel.
I want to follow up on that question because I know some people listening may not know what a golden shovel is. That's where you take a line of, well, someone correct me. Actually, Doug, you probably know the golden shovel better than I do. Can you give us a quick definition of it?
I guess the quickest way that I can give a definition is you take language from a poem, already previously published poem. So the idea is that you have simultaneous meaning making happening. You have those words, the original poem being read. And so depending on what the author wants to do, it doesn't have to go through once or twice. And I've even seen them not even make it through the whole poem. But the idea is that you have the meaning making that's happening from the original author's work, and then also the lifted author's work and working against each other. So that's the other thing that makes Dianelli's so insanely awesome is that we have really real cool playing in our head and we're imagining the pool players while we're having that juxtaposed next to the speaker viewing the mother sex book. And so what to do with that, that collision, that juxtaposition of both of those things happening at the same time makes that poem But yeah, that's probably the simplest way I can explain a golden shovel is to where the receive, the remix poem is read on the right-hand side. And then also there's other meaning making happening through the other language on the other side of that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I have a little confusion because I've only seen the golden shovel with Terrence Hayes and now Dianelli with you with We Real Cool, which is a full poem, but the full poem is like, I don't know, 10 words. It's a very short poem. So I don't know if you're supposed to traditionally try to do them only with short poems or do you do them with one line of another poem? And also it doesn't matter because we're poets, we will do whatever we want. And we will reinvent forms if we want to try something new, which is basically Terrence Hayes just invented that form like a couple of years ago. So I'm wondering, Dianelli, it sounds like you weren't intending to write about your mom's sex books. And I'm wondering if maybe that was a little challenging too, like getting worried that she's going to find out. And
yeah, my mother is a very generous and kind woman. She has basically given me a lot of permission to write about her story. And I tend to always show her a poem that she's in out of respect for her, but also because I have that type of relationship with my mother where I can bring her a poem that I've written that she's in. We're close in that way. Our relationship has changed dramatically throughout the years. Again, like, she was part of the religious system that I was in as well. So she had to grow out of some habits too and some modes of thinking, as well as I did. And we kind of did that together. And through that, we've become closer. And she's one of my best friends. She has seen this poem and she's seen all the poems in my book. And to this day, she says that she's my fan numero uno, which is fan number one fan. My mom's pretty cool. She definitely is cool enough for sex, as the poem says that she's not, but she is. She definitely is.
Well, God bless and thank goodness for parents who let their kids write about them. It's not always necessary, but it is bonus if you can get it.
So one of the poems that first just really got me was diary entry number 4, The Guzzle. As somebody who's culturally Catholic and a cradle Catholic, just that have the repeating word in the guzzle be God and to remix it and use the hyphen and be able to break it up. And just what I love about guzzles is it ends up being this almost a prism of meaning that happens. You keep on turning this word like this over and over again. And so for you to do that with the word God was just so much. So again, talking about form, talking about restraints, especially talking about the golden shovel and how demanding that form is. I've always felt emancipated by guzzles, even though I've never written one that's been published, but they always feel really freeing. So I was just wondering about the formal experience of writing a guzzle, especially now that you've talked about the formal experience of writing The Golden Shovel.
Yeah, I think it was similar. Like, I was like, I've never written one before. I want to just see if I can do it. What had happened was that from my 4th diary, I noticed that I was repeating God over and over again. I mean, I did that in all of my diaries, but this one seemed more than usual. So I was like, this seems very obsessive and I need to write in a form that repeats in this way. I'm like, should I write a villanelle? What should I do here? And I was like, you know, let me try the puzzle. So I also wanted to experiment and be in touch with that obsessive nature and psyche of the speaker of this poem. So like, some of the repetitive words are God, godly, and then ones like godlike, goddess. So I did want to switch up the form a little bit to allow for different layers of God and what that means to the speaker of the poem and her relationship to something spiritual.
And I'm very interested in the way that you get that last line in where it's like an echo of the name, but not all the way the name. Could you talk about that decision? How did you negotiate that last move in that penultimate line? Because I think that's such a really cool move that like it hints at that legacy while not doing it. Just so sly. Great craft.
Yeah. The puzzle, normally there is callback to the poet's name. And I think I wanted it to be a bit more subtle. And I wanted to think more about what is a word that could come out of the speakers. What name could she say if it's not hers, if it's not someone else's? What's a name that she might call out? And it's, oh God, you know, it means a lot of different things to me. It can be, oh God, in a moment of ecstasy and pleasure. Mm-hmm. It could be, oh God, in a moment of like spiritual awakening and prayer. I wanted it to be multi-layered in that way. Douglas, you were asking the questions and really making me think more about my work. A lot of these things I just do subconsciously. Now looking at it, I'm like, oh, fuck, I did do that, didn't I?
But then that makes the speaker, implies that the speaker is God. And I thought of this turn of phrase before we got that, like it's a crowned brew speaker. And so to think of the speaker wearing that crown in that moment just gives me all the goosebumps in the world. So I really loved the way you talked about it.
Thank you.
I remember when I was a teenager in high school, I was in AP English with a wonderful teacher named Diane Baez, who I feel like taught me how to read for the first time. Like, obviously I knew how to decode letters and for information, but she's the first person who made me think about what does it mean when the clock falls off the mantle in Great Gatsby. What is, why did the author put it there? Is that symbolic of time passing? So she was the first person who made me think about symbolism and significance of things. Thing I'm like, asked her, how do they do it? How do they get all that symbolic meaning? How do you figure out how to hide so many clues in your writing? And she said, you know, Tricia, I think a lot of authors are just telling the truth about their experience. Mm-hmm. And all that symbolic meaning just comes out naturally without them trying so hard. It took me like maybe another 10 years to realize that you can just sit down and tell the truth and all these things will come out that maybe you're not even intending to say.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we all bring ourselves to each poem when we read it. I mean, we bring our own symbolism to it. But for me, like, I grew up in the church and, you know, we were taught that the Bible is a coded book and nothing was ever really quite as it seemed. Like the fruit wasn't really fruit in the Garden of Eden. It was something else. And so I think that my mind works that way now without my even wanting it to, because I'm so used to that mode of thinking, so used to my brain digesting symbols and again, like bringing them back out too.
So would you say reading the Bible at such a young age, do you think that's kind of made you a poet unintentionally or maybe even intentionally?
I think it did. At least it gave me a different vocabulary to work with, I guess. I mean, I could say that probably the Bible was the first poetry that I hadn't like ever seen. You know, I'm thinking of like the Psalms, especially. We had to memorize a different scripture every month, and we memorized Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. If he maketh me to lie down in green pastures, like we had to memorize all of that. And to this day, like I can still say some of them completely, I can say the whole thing. I think that I learned what poetry could do in a spiritual sense. And then I took that later on in my life and kind of just ran with it and said, this is what, you know, the vocabulary that I have to work with. This is what I've seen before. And now like, what can I make with it? And I think that a lot of my poems are kind of a moving away from or a rejection of the Bible. Because I think that's what we do, especially with how we were raised. We either like move towards it, you know, move towards the things that we have learned, or we reject it and we move further away from it. And for me, I have subverted the Bible over and over and over again. I've had to create distance between myself and who I was before. Again, still honoring it, but still being able to look at it and say, I'm a different person. And this is what I think about those symbols now. You know, this is the type of poetry that I'm making.
I think the question that I wanted to ask, we do change as writers. Our concepts of who we are, who our parents were, changes so much over time and we become these different people. I guess I'm kind of wondering, what is that like as a writer to have the record of who you were and how you felt out there while at the same time going, yeah, the next book's going to be me having all these epiphanies about becoming a totally different person or a variation moving forward?
I'm actively not thinking about a second book exactly. You know, I'm thinking just about poems and how can I write another poem? So I'm not thinking too much about what the next book will be like and what it will entail. And if, you know, my voice will transform or how I think about things will transform. But at the same time, transformation and learning, I mean, that's just inevitable. I mean, things that I said a few years ago, I might have gotten canceled this year, you know? We are constantly evolving. And I hope that I am evolving into a better version of myself, both personally and also as a poet. So I'm hoping that the next book that there, maybe some of these same epiphanies or same images even might be repeated, but then that new things will be discovered. And I am hoping to bring a little bit more light and joy into my next collection. I want to celebrate those moments because this book didn't really have as much room for that, which is fine. I think that I was in a place where I needed to write this book exactly as it is. And I think the next book will have some pockets of joy and allowing for good things to happen to the speaker instead of always shitty things is what I'm hoping. And I think that in my own life too, it's kind of the same way. I am healing and, you know, becoming a better version of myself and allowing more empathy for myself. I think I also gain more empathy for the speaker of my poems, and I allow her to kind of just really celebrate and be in that joy in the poem as well. So that's what I'm hoping for in my next collection.
I love that. It reminds me a bit of a poem by Galway Connell, great Irish poet, about, I think it's called The Tear or Crying. I think it's Crying. And he says something about, you have to keep crying and crying because in the last tear, there is joy. And when you're done with all the crying, you laugh. I feel like that's part of why we do this work, is just get out the heaviness on your chest so then you can go breathe more freely again.
Right.
All right. Dianelli, thank you again for being here. And I just want to encourage everybody, go to Yes Yes Books, their website. You can get her book, Ugly Music. You can download it immediately for $5. You can also go and get a hard copy, so you can have a hard copy with a beautiful cover on it if you want. But either way, get her book. Thank you for being here and sharing so much wisdom. It's just such an utter pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, Trisha. Thank you, Douglas, for these thought-provoking questions and for your kindness and generosity. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I hope we get a chance to talk some more at some other time.
Yeah.
Tell me all about what it's like to have a poet who's a roommate. It sounds terrifying and awesome at the same time. Do you want to do a random act of kindness? How about a senseless act of beauty? Please rate and review us and write a comment on this episode.
It helps us get heard, get seen, and it helps other poets find us in the chaotic distractions of cyberspace.
Are you a poet who wants to be interviewed on the Poetry Salon cast? Contact Trisha at thepoetrysalon.com and send some of your work to be considered.
And don't forget that this writer will be teaching a guest workshop on the last Sunday of this month at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. To purchase tickets, write to Trisha at thepoetrysalon.com.
Thanks again for being part of our community. And whoever writes the worst draft wins!